Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
All right, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of questions from text this morning. Let me run through them real quickly. Somebody sent me a picture of a very pretty flower that is blooming now, I assume. It is got kind of purple flowers and lavender flowers and white flowers all mixed. It's Brunfelsia, Brunfelsia. It's the kind of plant that only people in Mobile can grow well because it doesn't overwinter. It's a very tropical plant, but it's very much a Gulf Coast kind of plant. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow is what it's sometimes called because the flowers change colors each day. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow is one of the common names. Several plants have that name, but Brunfelsia is probably the best known of those with that name, with that common name, Brunfelsia, B-R-U-N-F-E-L. S-I-A. Dan, I think you did send me a picture of a longleaf. Looking in the far background, the farthest tree that I could see is definitely longleaf. Those two in front of it may be longleaf. It's a little harder to tell, I'll be honest, from photographs, but the one in the back definitely is longleaf, and maybe the two in front of it. Look for the pine cones. There'll be big pine cones nearby on trees that size, and then you'll know for sure. You know, the pine cones will be bigger, as big or bigger than your hand. Really big things, right? That's one way to tell. Let's see, who else? Ooh, yes, I got a picture of a beautiful plant. Are these native azaleas? Indeed, they are. They're hybrids of native azaleas. They're probably one of... They're either Tommy Dodds, one of the Dodd hybrids, or they're one of the hybrids that is developed, that has been developed by Eugene Aromi and promoted by my good friend and saved, I should say, by my good friend Martin Vandergeesen. But it is a native azalea hybrid, certainly, but it has native azalea in its background. It's one of the parents. It's a deciduous azalea. Sometimes we call them deciduous azaleas, but there we go. I see other texts, but we have some callers. Bruce, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, I need some help growing cucumbers. I have tried for years, and I don't get anything hardly. Just some plants that grow for a little bit and then wither and die.
So what time are you what time are you sowing your seeds, Bruce?
That's what I'm asking you now. I got me a pack of cucumber seeds called Market More 76, and I was wanting to sow them in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I think, well, that's right, and you do. I think this is the time to do it. You know, cucumbers are not as susceptible. They have thinner vines. They're not susceptible to borers as much, and so... not having any success usually is the result of planting too late. But I think you're okay. I think you'll be okay. The heat's going to be a little bad, but I think you'll be okay. And I think that's a hybrid cucumber, and it should produce fairly well. I think you're okay. Now, how is your soil? Is your soil okay?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's pretty good. It's sandy, and I've been putting a lot of organic matter in it over the years.
Yeah, That's good. That's good. And I think you're okay. I think now's the time to plant. Plant them in a hill. That's what we like to say, you know, so you plant about three or four seeds in one little place and let them all come up and choose the strongest one is kind of the traditional way of doing it. If you plant them in rows, you'll be fine too. But I think you're going to be fine. I'm not sure why you haven't had success in the past, but cucumbers are a great thing to plant. You know, there are a lot of varieties of cucumbers out there. I've been playing with some of the Asian varieties, which do really well for me. I mean, I've been really surprised at how well they do, particularly the Japanese varieties that are less well known, and they have a really great flavor. I haven't tried Market Moore 76, though it is a big one. I see it a lot. Let me know how it does. I think it should do just fine.
Okay. How far should the rows be spaced?
Well, and of course, most cucumbers are climbers. Have you given it something to climb on?
I will. I can put a little trellis up.
Put a trellis up, and then I would say I would put. So again, if you got a trellis, I would plant. Say your trellis is about 4 feet wide. I would plant about 4 or 5 seeds for that trellis. Well, maybe give it 4 or 5. That'll be fine. 4 or 5 seeds for that trellis. The next trellis should have 4 or 5 more seeds, and the next trellis 4 or 5 more seeds. And you can. That's about the right. That's about the right ratio. So about every 4 feet of trellis, plant 4 or 5 seeds.
Okay.
And they don't have to be spaced evenly. They can even be spaced in a little bit of a clump, sort of towards the center of that, and select down to about two or three of the best seedlings that come up. How's that?
Okay.
All right, good. I think you're on track. I think you're going to do okay. You might need a little fertilizer, but I think you'll be okay.
All right.
Good. And another caller, Charlie. Dan, I'm listening. What's up?
Man, I know there are long leaves out there. That's actually the place I grew up out in Sims. I just can't figure out which tree's which, and I'm trying to look at them and I eyeball them the way you do, but it's just. I don't have enough experience, but I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, so just go to Mobile Botanical Gardens because you know that 90% of those trees are going to be longleaf, and you'll get that visual image in your head. It's just the branching is so coarse. It's just so – we say coarse, but what I mean by that is the branches are just fat. And there's no twigs. There's no little, there's no little fine twigs. You don't pick up any
right.
little twigs around longleaf. They're all as big as your thumb or bigger. And so that's the longleaf. But the one in the far distance, I'm sure that's a longleaf. And the two in front of it may be longleaf, though pictures, it can be sometimes hard to tell.
I'll try to get you some better ones next time I go out there for sure.
All right.
I had been out to the Longleaf Forest at Municipal, and those are gorgeous. It's just kind of seeing them in the wild, I guess, quote unquote, sort of tough to point them out. But anyway, I had a question about a couple things.
Yeah,
there is a. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I assume this is something that you'd be familiar with. There is a bush on Government Boulevard between the loop, the canyon, if you're heading east from the loop, and kind of right before you get to Lafayette, there is a, on the right, there's a big bush with these bright orange flowers that are blooming right now. And I thought it was a native azalea. Are you familiar with any that are in that area?
Yes, I kind of know where you're talking about. I think it's, yes, I ride my bike down that street frequently. There are several native azaleas blooming there. One in front of the big stone house. It really puts on a show every spring. And, it is one of the native azalea hybrids. That one is probably one of the series developed by the Dodds, but it is a native azalea, and it is really stunning. Our native azaleas, it's really cool. The Florida azalea used to be quite common in Mobile and Baldwin counties. It's now not as common as it used to be in the wild, which is a shame. You still see it on the Pascagoula River. It's one of the biggest, most amazing shows you've ever seen, is to see those Florida flame azaleas, as they call it, blooming on the Pascagoula River, just wild. This one that you're looking at is a hybrid between the native Florida flame azalea and some European deciduous azaleas, some Asian European deciduous azaleas. So it's got two parents, and the flowers are a little bigger than the wild one, but they're really beautiful. They're, you know, and the Botanical Gardens has got them, and we hadn't talked about the botanical.
I've seen them at the gardens before.
Yeah.
That's actually how I recognized it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what it is, and it's they're really great plants for us, and that particular cultivar does really, really well, and I'm pretty sure it's a Dodd cultivar. Yeah, they're gorgeous, absolutely stunning.
And then I had just a couple more questions real quick, and I can hang up and listen on the next segment.
But I better take a break. Dan, can you hold on?
Tomatoes, how good tomatillos might grow out down here. And I was wondering if you might could maybe, you know, wax poetic about some of the different kinds of what I grew up always calling Indian corn and what we can do with them. I think the dent and flint corn as opposed to summer corns. And I'm thinking about trying that this year, and I didn't know if you might have any information on it. I'd appreciate hearing what you had to say.
All right, great. We better take a break. Dan, as soon as we get back from the break, I'll try to address both of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bill.
Good to hear from you, Dan.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. lots of questions to answer. I'm trying to figure out which one to get to first. Josh is asking me, have I ever grown tatumi squash, and would I prefer tatumi or Korean ball squash? And yes, I've grown both, and I think they're both really fine. I will have to say that Korean ball squash is more resistant than tatumi to the squash vine borer, much more resistant. But I love tatumi, and tatumi is more resistant than yellow squash. And as people are saying, as David is suggesting, I do think straight neck squash is probably more resistant than crook neck squash. And straight neck squash, you're right, Dan. Traditionally, straight neck squash was the squash people grew along the Gulf Coast for sure. And in Alabama, somehow crook neck squash got in there. I don't know. I think it was a Tennessee influence. Dadgum them vols. I don't know, but somehow crookneck squash kind of took over from straight neck. It may be that straight neck is a little, has tougher vines. Maybe certain cultivars of it have tougher vines and are more resistant. One of the other varieties that came up that we've talked about that's resistant to squash vine borer. These are not squash bugs, but squash vine borer is a very different thing. Which really can put a damper on growing squash on the Gulf Coast. But another one that's very resistant is called Kershaw. Kershaw is how I grew up hearing it, and people used to grow Kershaw squash a lot. C-U-S-H-A-W. It has a lot of different names. It is very resistant to squash vine borer. It can be picked immature. It's usually grown as a winter squash, that is one that you harvest at the end of the season, but it can be grown as a small squash too. But the trick is, with all of these squashes that are big vining squashes, is finding one that is productive when it's immature. In other words, a lot of these squashes, like Seminole pumpkin, you can eat them immature, sure, but they're not going to produce that many squash, young squash, because they're really geared to producing big squash at the end of the season. So you want to find a squash that produces lots of immature squash. And Trombocino is one of those. Korean ball squashes have been hybridized and selected over the years to produce lots and lots of immature squash, and that's why they're better. Tatumi produces lots of immature squash as well. Does that help when you're thinking about this? You see what I'm saying? Any rate, give me a call if you've got any more questions about how all of that works. And maybe, not guaranteeing I can answer, but maybe, Wayne in Irvington sent me a picture. I almost wanted to cry. Wayne, that is the most beautiful picture I have seen in a long time. It is a beautiful picture of the sundial lupin. It is our native lupin. It's related to... What would lupin be related to? It would be related to Texas bluebonnets. Texas bluebonnets are a type of lupin, but these are much more beautiful. Our native lupins are much more beautiful. We still see the sky blue lupin in a lot of places. We still see the red-flowered lupin in lots of places, but sundial lupin has become very rare along the Gulf Coast. There are only a few places I see it. It is to be cherished. It is to be loved. It is an incredible thing. Do not dig it up. It only grows in certain types of soils. You can try to take it home and grow it in silty soil. It doesn't work. It just grows in some of our native soils. It's a beautiful thing to see. Wayne, thank you for that picture. Send me a little picture of its environment, and we'll see. Let's talk about how you can keep that and make sure that thing is there for a long time to come. David says Kashaw is treated like pumpkin in parts of Louisiana, and that's exactly right. It's a milder taste than some of the pumpkins, but very good in custards and lots of other things, as David points out. It's a great pumpkin, Amy, I'm listening. What's up? Tell me what's up.
Hi, Bill. Thank you for the call. I was calling about grass. I wanted to know what you might suggest for filler grass. I've seen a lot of products for patch grasses, and I do have some bare or very near bare spots in my yard, and I wanted to try to fill those.
Well, for summer grasses. Now, let's talk about it real quickly.
I currently have centipede grass.
Yeah. So there's summer grasses and winter grasses. Most of the products that you're seeing advertised are winter grasses, cool season grasses that will not survive summer here on the Gulf Coast. If they do survive summer and you're sowing them from seed, you're going to regret it because they're going to produce tons of seed heads. They're going to be obnoxious. They're going to take over your centipede. It's just going to be a disaster. So don't use any products from seed on those areas. You really need to use sod. Centipede is the hardest of all grasses to grow on the Gulf Coast. Which explains fully why so many people have it. I can't tell you why that is. I can tell you why it is. It's because it's the cheapest grass that contractors can buy. They're going to put down the cheapest grass they possibly can. And centipede is cheap, and it grows like it's cheap. It is not a fast-growing grass. It doesn't compete well with weeds. So if you've got bare spots, I might suggest trying to convert not just a small patch, but say a 10 by 20 patch or a 20 by 20 patch. Just convert it to something else. And that's one way to do it. If you've got large areas. If they're smaller areas, then you just need to patch with centipede or try to encourage the centipede to grow into those patches. How big are your patches, Amy?
They're under 10 by 20 for the most part.
But they're pretty big, sounds like.
I'm thinking about 10 by 10, 10 by 15 or something like that.
And at that point, you really need to figure out what we're going to do. So let's think about why you have patches that big. Are these areas in shade?
They're on the west side of the house for the most part. They get the afternoon sun.
Yeah, but they're not in too much shade, right? They're getting pretty good shade sun.
Some of them face north, so they get it's like a northwest area.
Yeah. So, you know, a lack of sunlight could be a problem, and that may be why you're getting patches there. In areas like that, and they're going to be difficult. You know, St. Augustine might work if you get enough sunlight. But if you're not getting enough sunlight, those are great areas, and just hear me out. Those are great areas for thinking about something other than conventional grasses. One of the things you can, and so shrubs and other things can work really well there, and that might be a good plan, because if you're not getting enough sun, no matter what you do, it's not going to work with conventional grasses. But here's another thing. If you really want that to be a grass-like area, given the fact that it's a large area and you've got problems there, it suggests to me that there's going to be a systemic problem that in the ground itself that's going to make it very difficult to grow grasses, or maybe in the environment. Consider using what some people call lily turf and what some people call monkey grass. Call it monkey grass if that's what you want to call it. Lily turf and monkey grass are, for most purposes, the same thing. Okay. And they're two names for the same thing. Okay. And let's just call it monkey grass, since that's an easier term. It's not a pretty term, but it gives you a sense of what we're talking about. You can mow it, and it mows really well. And it's really, it will take over that area. It will be beautiful. It will be the most incredible dark green. You'll never have to fertilize it. You'll never have problems with insect damage. It will be the most incredible grassy spot in your whole yard. And given the fact that I would recommend that, if you can find somebody to give you some and just kind of sprig it out about 6 to 12 inches apart, it'll fill in pretty quick.
Where would I find it?
You can find it at nurseries. Just find the coarsest old lily turf, the most old-fashioned lily turf you can find. Don't get anything fancy. Don't get anything with extra big flowers or extra big leaves or extra small leaves. Just get the plainest old monkey grass lily turf you can find. Or if you've got a neighbor who's digging it up, and lots of neighbors are always digging it up, you can get it from them and just pull it apart. Tease it apart so that you end up with, you could get a clump about 3 feet wide, and you could see that whole area with it.
Okay. You know, you bring that up. The second thing I wanted to ask about was, and it's not feasible for this yard, but I do have a friend that has a smaller yard. I heard a program that talked about residents using artificial grass. What is the feasibility of that?
I've never used artificial grass. I don't know. It would. Fortunately, even when I played football, I didn't have to play on artificial grass. So, but obviously, people use AstroTurf in lots of places. It looks funky. I mean, you'll know that it's AstroTurf. You'll know that it's kind of a carpet. What else can I help? How else am I going to help you here? I'm trying to think if there's anything else, because I don't think you're happy with the monkey grass. I got to take a break. Amy, hold on, and let me come back, and let me see if I can say something that's going to make you happy. I'm going to figure it out here. All right? Hold on.
Okay.
My Guguza Bella. She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Guguza, I wanna be. 'Cause Guguza is so crazy over me. Guguza grows in Italy. They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian charm. I call my gal Guguza 'cause she's sweet as she can be. She loves to hear me say, Guguza, please, oh, watch me. My Guguza, Guguza Bella.
She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella.
With Guguza, I wanna be. 'Cause Guguza is so crazy over me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. Amy, what are we going to do with this bare spot in your yard? You know, if my suspicion is, given the size of the area, that is it getting a lot of foot traffic? I should add that too. Is it getting a lot of foot traffic in that area?
For the most part, no.
No. So I think the soil is compacted there. I think you're probably also getting a good bit of shade. There may be some tree root competition. There may be a lot of things going on there. One of the things you can do if you want to go with conventional grass is crack that soil. It's probably pretty hard by now. It's compacted. It would be very difficult to just sow something on top of it, or even it would be very difficult to just lay sod on top of it. If you want to go back with sod, you might try St. Augustine there. Try St. Augustine grass there. It sounds like a good place for St. Augustine. But before you do, crack the soil. Just crack it with a fork. And then put some pine bark on top of it, about 3 inches deep. These are very important. You'll be wasting your time if you don't. Put a little bit of lime on that, and then put your sod on top of it. Now, I'll tell you the truth. I would wait until fall to do this. And if I were going to wait till fall, then I might just sow ryegrass. You can try that. You can try to put the St. Augustine on now. In fall, you can sow ryegrass. And here's the other alternative. And this might work for you. If you were to sow ryegrass in September, you can sow it. Just crack the soil. Do like I say. You could add a little bit of lime to it, a little bit of pine bark to it, and sow ryegrass in September. And you'll have beautiful ryegrass September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. How many fingers is that? That's 8 fingers. That looks like 8 months. You'll have 8 months of green grass, and then you're going to have 4 months where you're just going to have to put pine straw on top of that, because that grass is all going to die back. But then you can do the same thing the next year. And it's a really great way of doing it. And I recommend it. It's pretty easy. It's really easy. So there's your other alternative for that spot.
Okay. So during the summer then, there would not be any grass there.
There would not be any grass there. Now, if you want grass there during summer, you're going to have to go with St. Augustine. You can try to plant it now. It's not the best time, but you can try to plant St. Augustine there, like I said. So cogitate on this. Amy, cogitate on this. Decide which of these alternatives you want to do, and call me back next week, and let's talk about the strategy for doing it.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right. Good to hear from you. And let me, so I promised I was going to talk about corn. I feel a need to do that. Dan wanted me to talk a little bit about corn, and I put it off, and I said it was, listen, there were traditionally in the South, most people only know about sweet corns, but we grew, when my daddy was planting corn, it wasn't just sweet corn. He did plant a little sweet corn. But what they did was they mostly planted flower corns. And they were usually in the South. Most of our traditional corns, Dan, are dent corns. It's a strain of corn that is well adapted to southern seasons. You know, when we're looking at things like flower corns, corn was grown over a large area, and some corns were well adapted to growing in the subtropical zones of Mexico where it was developed, and they're used to the days not changing at all. They're used to short days, and they only produce well in short day conditions. Some only produce good at high altitudes. Some corns only produce well in the Corn Belt or farther north under long day conditions. So you have to consider all those things. But in the South, the traditional corns were dent corns, and they are really delicious. When people in the South ate corn, and the green corn festivals were probably, a lot of green corn festivals were about roasting ears. Roasting ears. Isn't that how you hear people say it? Roasting ears. People don't talk about it anymore, but they're ears that you picked young. Just as they were becoming into the milk stage, they were actually flour corns, and they didn't have that super sweet. They tasted like corn, folks. I know that's an amazing thing. They didn't have that super sweet quality that corns have, that some of the corns produced now have, but they're really great, and they're really good for flour and meal. And the meal that comes from these corns can be really incredible. If I were gonna go with these traditional southern corns, Southern Exposure Seed Exchange is the place to go. Boy, have they got a great selection. And a lot of really great corns to work with. I've grown their Luther Hill sweet corn. It's a really neat sweet corn. It's kind of short. It's a good corn for experimenting with in the South. It can be used for flour, but it's probably best used as a great sweet corn that has that, as a very early sweet corn. It's actually one of the parents, it's one of the parents of, Silver King and Silver Queen. I'm sorry, Silver Queen corn. It's one of the parents. It's very distinctive corn. But Country Gentleman, a great corn. There's some great. Hickory Cane is a great dent corn. Really beautiful dent corn. I would play with it. So there's a lot of great corns that you can mess with. One of the problems with corn on the Gulf Coast is that it gets, some varieties get very tall, and if we get a tropical storm, it'll flat knock it down. So you got to think about that. One of the nice things about Luther Hill and some of the other varieties, they don't get as tall, and that's one thing I would recommend to you is considering some of the traditional corns that don't get quite as tall for the Gulf Coast. There you go. Lots of fun talking about corn. We could talk about it a lot more, but we got some callers. I'm listening. Who's on the line, Charlie? David, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. Appreciate your show very much. I got a couple of quick questions for you. I have read repeatedly numerous times that you shouldn't put tomatoes in with collards. Is there any truth to that? Because now I've read where some gardeners are putting collards around their tomatoes.
Well, I can't imagine why it would make any difference, except for the fact that collards and tomatoes grow under very different conditions. So I wouldn't plant my collards at the same time I planted my tomatoes. I would plant my collards first, and then, which is what
the collards are already up. I mean,
we've
been harvesting them. But they're supposedly there's something that the roots put out that stunt the growth of tomatoes.
Well, in my ignorance, David, I planted my tomatoes where I had my kale and collards.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, and maybe there's something about it. I don't know. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that as an issue. I'll research it. I wonder if collards, if they stay in the ground, collards can attract nematodes, and maybe that's part of the issue. I'll have to think about it. I would be very surprised if there was a chemical that would in itself exuded by the collards that would affect the tomatoes. I've never heard of that, but now that you've mentioned it, I will research it. And I will also have the experience of knowing that it was, because there it goes, right where I got my tomatoes, right where I had some collards. So, I don't know.
All right. Yeah. I got another quick question for you. When it comes to the leaf factors, would you leave Campo leaves out of the total equation for mulch or compost or anything else?
Camphor leaves. Well, no, I don't think they're a problem. There really is nothing in any of those leaves that are going to cause a problem. Even if you used black walnut leaves, they generally don't cause a problem in the garden practically. So it's no, I wouldn't worry about it at all. I think they'll be just fine.
Well, good. You solved two headaches for me today, so I appreciate it very much. Have a great rest of
your day. All right, David. Always good to hear from you. We got to take a break. Beautiful flower of a Clusiana tulip. We'll talk about what a Clusiana is when we get back. Clint, thanks for sending that.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Ah, yes. So let's do this quickly because we don't have a lot of time in this segment. Wayne and Amy, I'm going to try to connect you. Amy, if you decide to do monkey grass, I may have some help for you. We'll see if it works out. But call me back next week and let's figure that one out. Boy, would I love to talk more about corn, but we're running out of time. Dan, you'll have to ask me at another time. Jim, good to hear from you. Thanks for that information.
To you, Bill.
Yeah,
I got a book in the mail from Fillory Farms.
Oh yeah,
which I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Absolutely.
They usually send it around August. Now, here's the dumb question I wanted to ask you, because I've never tried it in the summertime. What would happen if I planted some purple garlic, Chinese or Asian or whatever, stiffneck garlic, now?
It'd be a disaster. So what you do is, yeah. So what you do is you order your stuff now. They usually, it seems like it might be a little earlier. I got my catalog too. But generally, they know they're going to send out a catalog as soon as they know what their supply is. And that's usually in April. It seems to me it's usually in April or May. It does seem a little early to come in March now that you mention it. But you order it now, and it's not a bad idea to order it now. I would not plant it now because it needs winter chilling. Even the even the most tropical ones like Thai seem to need the winter chilling. So put it in fall. And, you know, the question is, what is the best planting date in fall? I don't know. I think October, maybe. Some people wait until November. You could probably wait until December. But I like planting it in October because I get more leaves and I can actually eat the leaves, which are really delicious.
Exactly. When I plant it just depends on how lazy I am at the time.
That's right. There you
between,
go.
Between the middle of October to the middle of November.
Yeah. Good. No, don't plant it now.
I was curious about that.
I was in the woods the other day. I got to tell you this, Jim. I was in the woods the other day, and way back in the middle of the woods. I mean, I don't think anybody had lived there for 100 years. There was this garlic, wild garlic. I mean, it was Asian garlic. It was growing wild in the woods. It was the most amazing thing. There were ramps and other things, but these were garlic that's obviously had been cultivated. And the bulbs had not formed yet, so I'm going to let the bulbs form. But man, where the leaves were beautifully hot. I mean, you ate those leaves; they were just. So I'm thinking, boy, this is something. Kind of an Alabama garlic. I'm excited about it. I'm going to go back and collect it.
I hope so. Maybe we can talk about that when we talk about hurricane, too.
That's right. So lots of things to trade here, Jim. Thanks for that information. I will get with you this week, and we'll deal with that sugar cane.
You bet. You know, it might be a good idea to order the garlic now, because the last time I was not able to get it because I didn't order it until August.
There you go. And there it is. So now you got the catalog in front of you. Go ahead and order it. That means you can get the varieties that sell out quickly. Thai Fire is one of those varieties,
and boy, is it good!
And it's really good. And so go ahead and order it now so that you'll have your selection. That's what I tell people is, you know, order the bulbs that bloom in spring while the bulbs are blooming. You're not going to get them until fall, but you'll make sure that you know that you got them in at the right time. So,
all right, that'll work for me, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, good to hear from you. Billy, I got your picture. I'm going to look at your picture. We're going to make sure that you're pruning those muscadines correctly, and I'm going to take a look at them. Look at them closely after the show, and you call me back next week, and let's try to figure that out. That beautiful picture of lupins in Irvington from Wayne, you know, that is just incredible. Wayne, call me back next week and let's talk about it. I'd love those things. I want to make sure that they survive. And that things are looking really, really good. Tony sent me a beautiful picture of a tree that is a Chinese fringe tree. That's Chinese fringe tree. It is the Chinese relative of our native fringe tree. They're both really beautiful things. I need to talk to you real quickly about the plant sale. The plant sale is, the plant sale is not going to happen in a conventional way. But they've got all those plants. You can order those plants online and come by and pick them up. Check this out. Check the information out. Look, go to the Mobile Botanical Gardens website. You can order those plants there. You don't have to walk through the fields. You can't walk through the fields because they're not going to be set up because that's the way things are right now. But they got a lot of great plants, a lot of great citrus, a lot of the things I talked about. Go online and order them. You can order them online. Go to mobilebotanicalgardens.org, www.mobilebotanicalgardens.org. Look for the plant sale, Plantasia, plant sale. You can order those plants online. It's the way it's going to happen. It's really important to the botanical gardens that you do this because they've ordered the plants. They've got them. They need to sell them. They can't hold on to them. Help them out. Help yourself out. There you go. So be sure to check that out. www.mobilebotanicalgardens.org. We will be back next week.
See the curtains hanging in the window. In the evening on a Friday night, little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Summer breeze paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor.
Summer breeze,
sweet blossom, come on.
Days of summer.